Goeienaand weer, baie welkom by ons program waar ons gesels oor die ruimte waarin ons woon, sterre en planete. Ons het vanavond vir Jim Adams in Amerika by ons, ook vir professor Mati Hofman en Willie Koorts. Net nou gaan ons luister na Kobus Olkers en ruimte weer, maar hier is eers ruimte nuus. Navorsers kon nou vir die eerste keer meet wat die mense impak op die aarde se waterhulpbronne is. Dit is gedoen met behulp van NASA se IceSat 2 satelliet. Die satelliet stuur elke sekonde 10.000 laserpulse na die aardoppervlak. As die pulse teruggekaats word na die satelliet, kan baie noukeurige hoogtemetings elke 70 cm tydens die oorvlug van die satelliet doen. Daar is vastgesteld dat die aarde se mere, damme en ander natuurlijke waterbronne, wat 227.386 beloop, tydens die studie van 22 maande met gemiddeld 0.22 meter gefluktueer het. Mensgemaakte bronne daarenteen het veel meer fluktuasie getoon, 0.86 meter. Tot sover dan ruimte nuus. Hier is Kobus Olkers dan nou met ruimte weer.
Goeienaand en goeienaand luisteraars. Ja, hier sit ons alweer in die nieuwe week met die son wat begin bezig raak. Die sonminimum lyk my is nou definitief voorbij. En dan kyk ons na wat die son die afgelopen week gedoen het. En dit was om vir ons een lekker vinnige sonwind spoed te gee wat by twee koronagaat uitgekom het in die suidelike halfrond van die son. Hulle het baie mooie auroras veroorsaak in Europa en in die noorderaie van Amerika. Maar hulle sal afroteer van die son af en het lyk nie vir my asof daar nog een krone gat op pad is vir die volgende week of so nie. Nou ja, dan is ons gaan kyk ons na die magnetiese activiteit op die son en ons sien twee baie sterk duidelike magnetiese areas. Dit sal twee gelukkig mooie diepole. Met andere woorde, die kanse vir uitbarstings is baie klein, maar nog steeds kry ons so B en C klas fakkels van hulle af, extra fakkels. En dit kan ons gewone mense nie veel plan nie, maar ons mense wat met die amateur radio werk gaan die verskil agterkom, die agtergrond gaan raserig wees. Dan wat filamente betref, sien ons drie van hulle op die oomblik, op die oppervlak van die son. Hulle is al drie echter baie nabij aan die rand van die son, noord en suid. So ek glo nie, ons gaan veel probleme van hulle af heen nie. Nou ja, dit is ons story vir die week en goeienaand allemaal.
Dit was Kobus Olkers. Oudergewoonte het ons jou eerste sonnag in die maand, het ons vir Jim Adams daar in Maryland in die Verenigde State. Good evening, Jim.
Goeienaand. I think I said it right.
Ja, yeah, Jim kom al goed reg met die Afrikaans. En dan het ons ook vir Willie Koorts. Hallo, Willie.
Goeienaand allemaal.
En natuurlijk vir professor Mati Hofman.
Goeienaand.
Right, we decided to dedicate the whole program on the perseverance little toy, I want to say, that is Ingenuity, the little helicopter. Jim, Yapi was very much involved with this project, isn't it?
Yeah, he was definitely, as in his position of leadership at JPL, he was pushing the envelope. Not only to assemble the right team, but also to make sure that it stayed at the forefront of NASA headquarters missions. So in other words, that we funded it and that we endorsed it and we found a way to get it to Mars.
Now, what's interesting, we talk about the Ingenuity helicopter, whether you can name it a helicopter or a drone, I'm not sure. But I think the traditional image that people have of a helicopter is the two rotors and then a small rotor at the back. But now this Ingenuity doesn't have a rotor at the back. How does it work?
There are helicopters on Earth that work this way. They're less common. And some drones on Earth actually work this way, but the two rotors on Ingenuity counter-rotate. The blade at the back of a traditional helicopter is designed to keep control of the yaw of the helicopter. So, you know, as one blade goes around, it imparts a torque to the body of the helicopter. And so you need another counter rotating or counter something to counter that torque, which is what's going on in the tail of a helicopter. In this case, what they've done is they've put one blade that rotates one way and one blade that rotates the other way, and they balance out the torque that each other makes. And so then the body of Ingenuity can stay stable and not spin around.
Jim, do they both provide lift?
Yes. And you can see that in, if you see the pictures of it, you can see the pitch of the blades and that sort of thing. The other interesting thing about the blades of this helicopter is they're both about 1.2 meters in diameter. They're extremely thin and very, very stiff. There's an effect in terrestrial helicopters, in Earth helicopters, called blade flop. And that's because the blades, when they get really long, they tend to sag and they swoop. And as they go around, they vibrate, they wiggle. Well, the vibration from the Ingenuity blades, if it had some blade flop, would just tear the little unit apart. So they had to find a way to make these blades extremely stiff and still provide the lift, which is also a feat. As you mentioned, they fly the Ingenuity in Martian atmosphere that's the equivalent of being at 40 kilometers altitude here on Earth, which is very, very high. And so the Ingenuity actually has to fly in essentially 1% of the Earth's atmosphere. And that means getting the right pitch on the blades. It means getting the right diameter on the blades and running it at the correct speed so that you can actually get lift.
What is also interesting that I've seen, it looks like the top rotor is providing mostly lift, where the bottom rotor has got the control for being able to fly in a certain direction. But of course, the top rotor is pushing down air through onto the bottom rotor. So ideally, it sounds like these rotors would have been better if they were apart. But there wasn't space in the mission for all of that. So it had to, because of these blades being so tremendously long.
Yes, that's right. Even though it's a small payload by NASA standards, you know, the body of the helicopter is just about 13 centimeters or so. The blades needed to be very long in order to get the lift. And that goes to a question that you often get from people, which is, well, why didn't they just use a quadcopter that they could buy at the local market? And the answer has to do with the blade design mostly. That and the autonomy of the unit, because, you know, there's nobody joysticking this helicopter. Mm-hmm. They upload a series of commands and Ingenuity decides how best to fly whatever route they tell it to fly.
Jim, I've looked at a photo of the team of Ingenuity, and actually this Jaapi van Sail, when he was still there at NASA, visited the team that year as in his leadership role. But there are more than 20 members, and the chief engineer is a lady, and he played a video of her talking about Jaapi's involvement with the Ingenuity. Well, she's should be quite a remarkable person, but it's just difficult for someone to understand why would they need 20 brilliant people for such a tiny helicopter. You mentioned the thin atmosphere, but in what aspects does this helicopter differ from a helicopter flying in Earth's atmosphere, which is a challenge in itself, because we are aware that it took much more time to develop helicopters than airplanes.
it is a big team, which is fantastic. And one of the reasons the team is so big is because the mission itself is so inspiring. And we really should talk about that at some point here. But the reason that there are so many members to the team really has to do with the specializations of the engineering that's necessary in order to make Ingenuity happen. There are thermal control engineers, there's mechanical engineers, there's aerodynamics engineers, there's solar power engineers, there's communications engineers, there's camera engineers, there's systems engineers that pull it all together. And then there's people that help integrate the whole thing onto the rover. So if you just think about that, it's a challenge just to assemble the right team to be able to build Ingenuity. It's kind of like an operating room, isn't it? In a hospital, you know, you've got anesthesiologists and surgeons and you've got nurses and everybody's got their own specialty. They bring in specialized doctors for whatever surgery is happening. It's the same sort of thing. Everybody has a specialty. Everybody has a skill and they do it well in order to make the mission happen.
Yeah, I could maybe also comment that there's a very nice video by Veritasium when he actually visited the lab and they showed the actual helicopter still and before it flew and so forth. And what was very interesting to me is that the amount of engineering that's needed, as you said, I mean, what astounded me was that a third of the power that's in the batteries, only a third is available to fly.
Yeah.
The rest is just to keep the thing alive, to keep it warm. As you say, the weight had to be so little. The blades are, as you say, very stiff, but very, very light and strong to be able to spin at this tremendous speed. And then the other thing which I found amazing is that they couldn't even use the sort of aerogel, the lightest material that's around, in order to insulate the whole fuselage, and they actually use gas, just CO2 gas. So it's an amazing engineering feat that, eh?
The CO2 gas, I believe, comes from the Martian atmosphere. They let some of the Martian atmosphere in. So then they don't have to carry the aerogel with them either, but the aerogel weighs almost next to nothing.
I wanted to know, Jim, the material they use to make the blades, is it Kevlar or what's it?
So it's got it's a carbon epoxy mix, and I believe it does have a little bit of Kevlar, you know, maybe a Kevlar layer in it. But it's a material that is designed to be extremely stiff so the blades don't wobble as they rotate.
Sorry, Jim, the specifications of the Ingenuity as far as flight time and speed and altitude and those interesting facts, what are these?
We'll talk about that, and then maybe I'll explain why they are what they are. We've already talked about the fact that it flies to 40 kilometers. The blades are 1.2 meters. The body is about a 13-centimeter cube. It has a range of 980 meters. That is, on a full battery charge, it can fly 980 meters away from the landing base, from wherever that happens to be. By the way, it doesn't fly off of the rover. The rover puts it on the surface. The rover backs away, and then the helicopter takes off from the surface. It flies at an altitude of about 4.5 meters max above the surface of Mars. So it's not flying very high and it's not flying very far. It has a 90-second flight time. And that's largely because the batteries had to be extremely lightweight. And as we've said, most of the batteries used to keep the electronics warm at night. And it takes a whole Mars day, which is 24 hours and 39 minutes, in order to recharge that battery. So you can see that 90 seconds of flight time a day is pretty precious indeed. So why? Why would they do that? Something with so many constraints. And it really comes down to the fact that Ingenuity is what NASA calls a technology demonstration. nobody has ever flown a helicopter on another solar system body before. And people just aren't really sure that you can do it. So to learn the lessons necessary in order to build a functional helicopter, something that could carry a payload to support future Mars exploration, we fly this technology demonstration to prove out the various technologies that we need in order to build future missions. And that's what, if you remember the Pathfinder was named Sojourner. It was the first little rover that we flew to Mars. That was a technology demonstration that enabled the Spirit and Opportunity rovers. It's the same sort of thing here for Ingenuity. We're not sure it's going to work. We're pretty sure it's going to work because we've put a lot of time and effort into it, but you just don't know exactly. And they will learn amazing lessons about how to fly in this atmosphere that's very, very different from Earth.
Ingenuity, does it have a back and a front side?
Oh, that's a really good question. I am pretty certain that the JPL would designate a cardinal direction for one of the sides, just so that they can keep track of, you know, how the sun is falling on it, what direction they're going to fly in order to create a vector to fly one direction or the other. So, does it have a back and a front that you could see? It probably, you know, not all four sides are the same, but I know one of them has a camera on it. So, there's obviously you don't go to Mars without taking pictures. And so there is a camera on board. And they'll take pictures not only for engineering purposes, but obviously because everybody's going to want to see the pictures of Ingenuity flying.
And the temperature regulation on the outside, what material did they use on the outside?
So they are using they call it multi-layer insulation. It's basically Mylar layered. So it's a blanket basically, but it's a very small blanket, obviously, and then in between that and the electronics and the battery, well, the next layer is actually the battery. So they wrap the battery around the electronics in order to keep the electronics warm, and in between the blanket and the battery is this CO2 gas that we talked about, which basically is Martian atmosphere, in order to try and keep the thing warm. You know, I tried to find the temperature variation in Jezero Crater, and I couldn't. But on the equator in the summer at Mars, just in the summer on the equator at Mars, the temperature extremes are very wide. The high for the day could be as much as 20 degrees C, and the low often gets down into the minus 70s C. So it's a big challenge to try and make this thing work just from a thermal standpoint.
And
Jim, still trying to understand more about how Ingenuity navigates on Mars. You mentioned it traveling at, well, what was the speed, but it can't translates into about 10 meters per second. That's the speed of a very fast 100-meter runner. Mm-hmm. And it takes pictures of Mars surface and has to recognize that while it's flying at that right speed and have to keep track of its position relative to the rover. And it also probably have to keep track of the vertical picture, not just horizontally. So is there some stereo capacity? How exactly does it succeed to navigate without GPS?
Ingenuity has built into it a rudimentary inertial measurement system, accelerometers, and other devices that enable it to know how high it's flown up. And if you remember that, then you know how far down it is, right? Hmm. Or to know how far it's translated one direction. And if you remember that, then you know how far you have to go to get back. Mm-hmm. So that's the fundamental navigation system of Ingenuity.
Okay, so it's a relative navigation, relative to where it started.
Perseverance will set it down, and Perseverance, of course, has a very sophisticated system of nav cams that take a stereo image of the region every night, and they reconstruct the region so that they know exactly where the Perseverance rover is relative to the geological features on the surface of Mars. And then the other thing that they can do is they can place both Ingenuity and the rover to some degree of accuracy by using the ranging from the radio communications, both back to Earth and to the MAVEN and MRO spacecraft. Ingenuity will talk to Perseverance. The Perseverance will talk to the relay spacecraft orbiting overhead, as well as back to Earth. And so they'll have this sense of radio triangulation as well.
Now, Jim, when Ingenuity takes off, it flies out, can it put itself down at a certain spot, go up again and come back, or is it always fly out and come back?
So I believe that what the engineers that designed this are going to be very, very cautious. So the first time it flies, they're going to go up. And they may not even go the full 4 meters, right? They'll probably go up a meter and see what happens and then put it right back down from where it took off. Now, the interesting thing about that is every time they take off, they're going to blow a bunch of dust out. I don't know if they've thought of this, but if I were there, they would have thought of it. It would be best to land in the same spot that you just took off of because there's less dust there, right? They'll try a few trials where they go up a little bit, and then ultimately they'll go up a little higher, and then I believe they'll go out, up and out, but they won't go the full range, though, because if it goes down and Perseverance has to go find it, that's a quite of a drive for Perseverance. So they'll go out a few meters and then come back. So there'll be a series of gradually more and more aggressive tests. The mission itself is designed to last for 30 days. So after 30 days, the Ingenuity is supposed to be done. That's not only the design lifetime of the helicopter, but also how they've scheduled the tests and the operations associated with proving the technology for Ingenuity. Of course, on the other hand, the Mars Exploration Rovers, Spirit and Opportunity, were designed for 90 days, and one of them lasted over 10 years. So we'll see.
I believe the very first test is actually going to be a mutual selfie.
A mutual selfie. Wouldn't that be cool, huh?
that is it, apparently, yeah. I saw an interview with one of the engineers. He said,
yeah,
we're in the selfie era, so that's what we're going to do.
A lot of people in the Facebook group were asking, well, where are the pictures? And I believe the answer is they haven't deployed Ingenuity yet. It's still tucked up underneath the belly of the rover. And when they deploy it, there's like this cover that has to be dropped. And then the rover will back away to get away from the cover. And then there's this sequence of deployments where they let down half of it first, and then they let the other one down, and the legs deploy out. And then ultimately they cut the final connection to the rover, and it drops just a few centimeters down to the Martian surface. And then Perseverance will back away again and reveal the helicopter for the first time.
When the helicopter have landed, does the rover drive over it again, and then it go back to its storage position?
Like a mother hen nesting? You know, I don't think so. If I were part of the team, and again, you know, this is me speculating, but they would not want to risk damage to either the rover or the helicopter by trying to do that alignment again, so that the rover could drive back over.
Yes. Well, it's towed sideways anyway, so it'll actually come out at an angle, and there's explosive bolts involved. Yeah, it's quite complicated, so it'll never go back. It's like buying a new shirt. You'll never get it back in the package, you know.
Yeah, yeah, so it will be charged on the little platform through which on which it is released from the rover, and that will include the solar panel needed to charge it again, which will be relatively small.
So the solar panel to charge Ingenuity is actually located above the rotor blades. Mm-hmm. Once the Perseverance drops the Ingenuity onto the surface and backs away, then one of the first things that Ingenuity is going to do is top off its battery cells using the solar panel. Wherever it goes, if it flies 900 meters, I'm sorry, it's a 980-foot range, it's a 300-meter range. If it flies 300 meters and then sets down, it's going to use that solar panel that it brought with it to recharge the batteries.
Mm. Okay. We have to stop there, unfortunately. Jim, people can reach you on the Facebook group.
Yeah, I love answering questions on Facebook.
Yes. Very?
072, cell phone number, 072-45-79-208. 072-45-79-208.
Marty?
083-625-7154. 083-625-7154.
En dan die program se e-pos is sterreplanete@gmail.com. sterreplanete@gmail.com. Volgende week is ons terug. Tot dan, mooi loop.